Good evening, everyone. It's good to be back with you again this evening, and I certainly appreciate the words of encouragement this morning. I certainly need them. They're very meaningful to me, so thank you for that. In Romans 15, chapter 4, Paul writes that the Old Testament was written for our instruction, and that through our perseverance and encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope. This evening, I want to kind of turn back to some of the pages of the Old Testament and take a story out of the book of Daniel. If you want to open up your Bibles to Daniel, we'll spend the majority of our time in chapter 3. And I'll tell you right up front and be honest with you, I won't have time to read a whole lot because there is a lot to it. So I'm going to do a lot of summarizing. I'll hit some verses, but I'll encourage you to go home and to read, you know, the text, because I'll give you hopefully three lessons that you can take from this text tonight, but there are far more that are included in that text. You know, when we see Daniel, he opens up his book, we see that Nebuchadnezzar had just encircled Jerusalem and he had taken captive King Jehoiakim and taken prisoners back to Babylonian. And when he got there, Nebuchadnezzar instructed his chief of officials, say, hey, select some young men. Select these young Jewish men and train them in the Babylonian language and the culture and the sciences. And within the book of Daniel, we hear and we know of four of those young men. Right? We know Daniel. And there's Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah. And we may know the last three a little bit better by the names they were given in their Babylonian captivity, which is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I'm going to use Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego tonight. And maybe even I'll shorthand it and say SMA, because there are a lot of words to say. But it's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And one thing I want us to think about this evening, you know, when I was reading through the text, and when you read through a lot of the text of the Old Testament, it is so easy to read that text and say, okay, they did that and flip the page. Okay, they did that and flip the page. This evening, let's try to put ourselves in the shoes of those young men. All right. They were just taken captive into a foreign land, into a land that didn't believe in their God, didn't respect any of their beliefs. Certainly, you know, they were in a position of submittal. All right. And so let's think about that as we go through the text this evening. So three lessons I want to give to you this evening. The first, building a foundation, remaining faithful during times of adversity builds our spiritual strength and maturity. And so our story is going to evolve around Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in chapter 3. But before we get there, I want to turn back to chapter 1, because I think there's some important points that lay also a foundation for what we're going to be talking about a little bit later. And this is that those men, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they continued to follow God and His commandments. They would not bow down or would not bow to other man's commandments, either literally or figuratively, either one. They wouldn't do it. You know, in a world where their earthly masters didn't respect God and wanted them to act in ways that were contrary to the way God wanted them to act, they still stood firm. They still stood firm. And there's some examples early on here in chapter 1 that I think are instructive for us. Beginning in verse 8, we see that And the text will say Daniel, but I think as you look down through the body of the text there in chapter 1, I think we know it's implied that it's the four of the men. It's the four men there, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are making their stand. In verse 8, these men say they won't defile themselves by eating the king's portions, right? And I didn't touch on it, but back in verse 5, the king set aside and would have instructed his officials to say, hey, I want those men to eat this type of food. It was special food, food that the other captives didn't get. He wanted them to eat that food. And Daniel and these men said, no, we're not going to eat that food because it would defile us. Now, we don't know specifically what you know, what it would have been out of God's commands that they would have been, you know, been what they would have been doing contrary to God's word. But it likely would have been something along the food ordinances or the food laws that God gave them because of the way, you know, the Gentiles or the heathens, if you will, in those days, you know, treated their meat and processed their meat. So it was probably something along that line. But right off the bat, the first thing that we have recorded in Scripture of what they did was say no to a command. No, I'm not going to do that. Right? You think about where they're at, right? You have the greatest king on earth and giving instructions to his chief of officials and saying, I want them to eat this, these foods, and they say, I'm not going to do it. But you know, notice in verse 9, it says that God granted them favor in the eyes of the officials and compassion. But that trial wasn't over, right? The trials that they face, and we'll look at this throughout the book of Daniel, we'll see that the trials that they face, that the magnitude of those trials continues to increase throughout this story and throughout the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So every single time, the intensity of that trial is going to ratchet up. It's going to keep ramping up, right? And so here we see that first they said no to the commander, to the official who instructed them, we're not going to eat that meat. Now God granted them favor in his eyes, but if you look down in verse 10, it says, now wait a minute, I understand that you don't want to do it, but I'm worried about my life here, all right? This commander's saying, I'm worried about my life, because if you look haggard, because you're not eating the food that I've commanded you to eat and instructed you to eat, the king's going to take my head, right? And I'm worried about that. Right, so once again, we're starting to see the intensity of that trial continue to increase in their lives. But what did they say? They could have easily said, you're right, you know, I'm not trying to put you in a difficult position here, and I understand the situation you're in. All right, we'll just go ahead and do it. Right? Nobody will know. That's not what they said. They said, give us 10 days. Right? Give us 10 days, and you can check our appearance versus everyone else. And so what happened at the end of those 10 days, their appearance was better than everyone else who was eating the king's rations, right? And the king's portions, right? So they, again, were blessed, but they stayed faithful during those times of trial, right? They continued to stay faithful. So they were building that foundation of faithfulness, right? It started at the beginning when they first got there into captivity. And it'll continue throughout the story that we're going to tell. But they built that foundation of faithfulness from the beginning. And each trial continued to get more difficult for them. But God blesses the faithful, right? God will continue to bless the faithful, and He blessed these men. Down in chapter 1, verse 17, and actually 17 through the end of the chapter, note in verse 17 it says, as for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. Right, so he's starting to bless them. In fact, in verse 19 or verse 20, that they were actually given and they were seen to have wisdom and understanding that was 10 times greater than all of their peers. And why? Because God is blessing them for remaining faithful. You know, and as Christians, we have that same encouragement today. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 14, it says, even if we suffer for the sake of righteousness, we are blessed. We are blessed. So remaining faithful during adversity certainly leads to our Christian maturity. Just as it was in these young men, surely they had started back in their youth knowing the law and they were going to hold to it. For us, it's the same process, right? Remaining faithful during adversity leads to our Christian maturity. In James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, we read that very familiar passage. It says, consider all joy when you encounter various trials. And I always thought, there's not a lot of joy when we get into these trials, right? When I was younger, I thought, that didn't sound very happy and like a joyful time to me. But the point being that our faithfulness then produces endurance, perseverance. Our perseverance in those trials produces our spiritual maturity. Right? In Romans chapter 5, verses 3 through 5, Alan will get to this in a little while, but And in Romans, Paul puts it this way. We are to exult in our tribulations. Why? Because they bring about results in perseverance. Right? And perseverance means, you know, that it's that steadfastness. It's hanging in there when all the times get tough. And the more we endure those tribulations, the more we gain the quality of perseverance. Right? It continues to grow on itself. And notice that perseverance brings about proven character. It means you've been tested and tried, and you've passed the test. You've weathered the storms, and you've stayed faithful. Right? And then proven character produces hope. Right? It's that expectation of having glory with God. It's knowing that we're going to be able to go to heaven and spend eternity, forever, with our God. So the point being, maybe, that I want to make out of the first one, if I summarize it, you know, our faithfulness during trials, as with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, it allows us to grow stronger in the Lord and prepares us when we continue to face those increasingly difficult trials, the temptations, the persecutions, the afflictions, whatever they might be, whatever we're facing. And we can't wait until the time of the trial to establish our faithfulness to God. All right? We need to begin right now and continually build on this foundation as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did. And we'll see that throughout this passage and this text of how the foundation that they built helped carry them through this trial. And it was a test that they're going to be facing here. So if you want to flip over to chapter 3, kind of begins the thrust or the main point of our lesson and the story that we're going to go over this evening. So we have Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel describes him in chapter 5, verses 18 and 19, as this powerful God. Now, God bestowed this power and this grandeur on him, but he's powerful. And it says that he had the ability to give life, and he had the ability to take life away. Right? This is a very powerful man. It's the most powerful king on earth. He was used to getting what he wanted when he wanted it. When he gave orders, he expected those orders to be followed right then and exactly how he laid them out. Right? That's just who, so let's put it in the context, right? That's who Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are going to start to face. It's the most powerful king on earth. Okay, let's just put that aside, put that in the back of your mind. In verse 1 and down in chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, we see that Nebuchadnezzar builds this big golden image. It's 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide. And if you think of a cubit being, it should be, depending on how you measure it, maybe a foot and a half per cubit. It's 90 feet tall by 9 feet wide. It's 6.5 stories tall. This huge 6.5 story tall golden image. He sets it out on a plane where everybody can see it, right? You can't miss the thing. It's just sitting out there. And he sends a messenger around. And he says, the messenger says, the king commands that whenever you hear this music being played, you're to bow down. You're to bow down and worship that image, right? That's the command from the king. You're to do that. And in verse 7, we see that sure enough, the music played, and everybody bowed down, right? Everybody bowed down and worshiped that. Well, maybe not quite everyone. Not quite everybody's bowed down and worshiped that image. Down in verse 12, we'll read about this, but first, if you look at verse 8, it says, well, these old Chaldeans, yeah, they noticed the fact that the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you know, they didn't bow down. So what do? They immediately run to the king. Whether it's jealousy, you know, we don't know, but immediately they run to the king and say, hey, there's a guy who didn't bow down and worship, you know, your golden image. Nor do they serve your gods. And so the next thing we see that in verse 12 it says, they say, there are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, and they call them out, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up. They're not going to do that. So they were identified clearly that that's who they were. Right? So we know you had to appreciate Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They knew full well when they didn't bow down and worship that image, it wasn't going to go unnoticed. You couldn't miss the image, right? It's 6.5 stories tall. It gleams in gold. It's sitting in a plane. It's out there in wide, you know, out in the middle of everywhere else, a wide open area. You have the music playing. Everybody else is bowing down. And you stick out like a sore thumb, right? Those three men stuck out like a sore thumb. You know, you're looking around and everybody's bowing down. You think about the temptation they're facing. You know, nobody's going to know. Nobody will know if I just bow down. I won't even acknowledge it, but I'll bow down because I don't want to be separated from the crowd. But they didn't do that, right? But note the intensity of the trial is going to continue to grow, and it grows here, and it's going to continue to grow through that story. But they didn't bow down. They knew the law, and they knew that the law that was given in Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 through 6, that you shall have no other God before me. No other God before me, nor should you worship any idols. They knew that. So that temptation to go along would have been tremendous. But because they were building that foundation of faithfulness, they were able to endure that trial. But it's not over yet. It's not over for these men yet. In verse 13, you have the king. And remember, the king's used to getting exactly what he wants. He says, the Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to him. You know, this wasn't one of those casual, guys, could you come over here for a minute? I want to talk to you. It's a conversation. I want those three men right here, right now, right? And he brought them. They were brought right in front of him. And he said, Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods and worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the moment you hear, and I won't go through all the music, but all of this music, and you bow down, you worship that image I have made, very well. I'll give you a pass this time. And you could have just seen when you're standing there, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I got to think the fury and the volume of his voice would have parted their hair, right? Because it wasn't that he was just mad. He was enraged. Right? I mean, this is rage. I mean, he is really mad that these guys aren't doing this. But he says, all right, I'll give you a pass if you just do it this time. All right. But he says, but if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of the furnace of a blazing fire. And what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands? So here we have Nebuchadnezzar, you know, basically giving them the ultimatum, right? Of saying they're, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, again, captives in a foreign land. You got the most powerful king on earth giving you an ultimatum. Look, you can bow down and worship that image that I gave you. I'm going to throw you in this furnace. Death by fire, especially in that situation, be very unpleasant. That's an understatement, right? It would be incredibly painful. It'd be a horrible way to die, right? And that's what they're facing. They're looking at that, and that's the ultimatum that he gave them. And he kind of goes on a little bit further and taunts them and says, what God, little g, can deliver you from my hands? So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are standing there, and they have the choice of either defying Nebuchadnezzar or denying God. That's the choice they're facing, right? So once again, the intensity of the trial, the intensity of the test continues to ratchet up. But, you know, for them, it seemed to be an easy response. It seemed to be an easy response for them. In verse 16, it says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, says, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to give you an answer concerning this matter. Our mind's already made up. We already know what we're going to do. You don't even need to ask us the question. Our minds are, you know, we know what we're going to do. We stand firm for God. We're not going to give in. He already knows what the answer is. They already know what their answer is going to be. But know what they said in verse 17. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of the blazing fire. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up. It's a very simple and a very confident response. But think about that response that they just gave back to those to Nebuchadnezzar. They're not going to bow down. They're not going to worship. And we fully believe our God will deliver us. You know, what a powerful example of three young men and then standing firm. And remember, it's three young men, right? These aren't the kind of the wily veterans that we talk about. These are three young men who have already begun to build their foundation of faithfulness to the Lord. And they're going to continue to stand firm. They're going to continue to put their faith in God. But then note in verse 19, the fury of a king. He said, then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath. One version says, fury. So you know, if you thought he was enraged then, it's up however many notches at this point with Nebuchadnezzar. And his facial expression altered toward them. I don't know what that facial expression was, but I'm sure it wasn't a pleasant one. All right, it would be one that you just don't want to see. Right? And notice he said, he ordered the people, said, make that furnace seven times hotter. They denied me. You make that furnace seven times hotter. You think I was just going to throw you in? I'm really going to throw you into the fiery furnace now. He got some warriors, some of his valiant warriors, and he said, you tie up those three men, you throw them into the furnace. They tied them up. They went over to throw them in the furnace. The heat from the flames killed the men that were actually throwing them into the furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego tumbled into the furnace. Right? They tumbled into the furnace. But then in verse 24, we start to see God's deliverance. God's deliverance of these men. So he's looking in, and it says in verse 24, the king was astounded and stood up in haste. So while his face was altered toward them back then in fury and rage, right now then it's changed again. Because why? He's asking his officials, didn't we throw three men in there? Officials, we threw three men in there. I see four. I see Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in there, and I see another fourth figure. They're all walking around in there. I don't understand. Didn't we turn the furnace up seven times, right? And he turned it up seven times. They're still on there just walking around. So Nebuchadnezzar in verse 26, he says he came near to the door of the furnace of the blazing fire, and he responded and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out, you servants of the Most High God, and come here. Then Shadrach and Meshach came out of the midst of the fire. They just walked right out. Verse 27 says they didn't even have any effects of that fire. No effects of the fire whatsoever on them. Their hair wasn't singed, their clothes weren't burned, they didn't even smell like the fire. And while I wasn't there, I can imagine that there was a buzz around everybody that was there, right? They didn't want to say anything out loud, but you know they had to have been talking between each other. Why did you say that? He doesn't smell like fire, right? Those guys were in there. They should be burned up. They come right out. They don't even smell like the fire. How could this be? Right? You can just imagine hearing that buzz that was going on amongst everybody. But nobody wanted to say anything. Right? But God delivered them. They had faith that God would deliver them, and he delivered them. And I think about in our lives, and I think, as I mentioned this morning, I think if we step back and really start thinking about these stories that are being told, I think there's times in our lives we also struggle in trusting God to deliver us. I think we struggle at times trusting God to deliver us. And there may be some reasons, but one I think maybe in particular is it's because of our perspective, right? We see the issue in front of us and the trial in front of us from our perspective. And not God's. So I have, and I'm assuming we have this little small solution set for the problem in front of us. And that's how I see things. But God has this infinite ability to work things according to his purpose and however he wants it to work out. Right? So I need to quit viewing it from my little perspective over here, and I need to be looking at it from God's perspective. And we know God can deliver us. Second Peter 2, chapter 2, verse 9 says, God knows how to deliver us from temptation. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13 says, God won't allow us to be tempted beyond anything we can handle, and He's going to provide a way of escape for us. Paul writes to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 11 and 12, and then chapter 4, verses 17 through 18, that God delivered him through his persecutions, his afflictions, whatever trials he was facing in preaching the gospel. And then he said that he was going to deliver him from evil to a heavenly home. And we know over in 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 10, that Jesus is going to be our deliverer from the wrath to come. I want to read to you out of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. If you just want to listen, that's fine. Chapter 5, verses 9 through 11. It says, "For God has not destined us for wrath, but for obtaining salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, and whether we are awake or asleep," in other words, we're still alive or we've died, "we live together with Him. Therefore, encourage one another and build up one another just as you are doing." God can deliver us not only in this life, but we have that the greatest blessing where God is going to deliver us through Jesus Christ if we remain faithful to a heavenly home. All right? We're going to live eternally, forever. We're not going to just go spend time in eternity. We get us to live forever with God. Right? So no matter what affliction or temptation or persecution we face, we need to know with confidence that God will deliver us. He works all things together for our good. Right? Romans 8, 28. We just need to trust in Him. We just need to trust Him. All right, and quickly the third point. We need to realize the positive impact on others we can have by standing firm and remaining faithful during adversity. I was going to begin in verse 28, but actually, if you go back to verse 26, you remember when Nebuchadnezzar is calling to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and he says, "Come out." Notice he says, "You servants of the Most High God." You see a change in his attitude, right? Before he's saying, "There's no gods that can deliver you from my hand." Now he's saying, "You servants of the Most High God." He knew who they served. Right? So we already start to see that change in his attitude. But then in verse 28, listen to what he says. He says, Nebuchadnezzar responded, and this is verses 28 and 29. It says, Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who put their trust in him, violating the king's command and yielded up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses reduced to a rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way." Those three men standing firm had that mind-changing impact on Nebuchadnezzar, right? Nebuchadnezzar recognized the stand that they took there in verse 28. He was defying their commands. They weren't going to worship other gods. They put their full trust in God. They were willing to die in order to continue to serve and worship the true and the living God. And notice down there in verse 29, he recognized that no other gods could have delivered him. No other God could have delivered them. And then down in chapter 4, verses 2 and 3, Nebuchadnezzar proclaims the greatness of God. He says, "It has seemed good to me to declare the signs and wonders which the Most High God has done for me. How great are His signs! And how mighty are His wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and His dominion is from generation to generation." Again, the impact of standing firm during adversity, the impact it had on Nebuchadnezzar. You know, we likewise can have a positive impact on others in our Christian walk as long as we remain, you know, we maintain our allegiance to Jesus Christ and we stand firm for God. Colossians 4, verses 5 and 6 talk about our conduct and our behavior and our speech and the positive impact it can have on others that are non-Christians. Sometimes our example and our speech may be the only, you know, inference or introduction they have to Christianity. But we can have that kind of an impact. Peter, when he writes 1 Peter, he actually begins in chapter 1, and he's writing to all of these Christians that have been dispersed all over these various regions because of the persecution that they've been facing. And he knows they're going to be facing a lot of trials, very intense trials from the Roman government. And it was intense what they were going to be facing. But he's writing this letter to encourage them. And he says in chapter 2, verse 12, he says, continuing to live faithful to Christ and living faithfully, keeping your behavior excellent among the Gentiles is the way he says it, even when you're persecuted, can result in those being saved around us. That's the impact we can have if we remain faithful. So we should never underestimate the impact of remaining faithful through adversity and what that impact has on both Christians and non-Christians alike. It can also have an impact on Christians as they see other Christians standing firm. So this evening, you know, there may be some in the audience that are just maybe struggling just with standing firm and standing fast, trying to build that foundation so as they continue to face those trials, the trials in their lives, that they can have that foundation of faithfulness to be able to endure those trials. Maybe I don't feel like we have enough trust in God to deliver us. You know, there may be other needs, I guess, spiritual needs that you may have as well tonight. And I just ask that if you have any spiritual need that we can help you, we can support you and pray for you, I just ask that you come at this time as we stand and sing the invitation song.